From WXXI News, this is Education Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. It is Friday. It's noon somewhere. It's 1 o'clock somewhere. And our connection for this hour is going to be made in just a few weeks. The 7th through the 10th of May, officially, is the Rochester Cocktail Revival. It's back, but really the RCR begins Tuesday, May 5th. Now, a year ago on this program, we had a good chance to kind of dive into cocktail culture, talk about what's been going on across the country, talk about how Rochester really has become, you know, and we always want to pat ourselves on the back about what we're doing well, but this is a town with a really diverse cocktail culture here, some really smart people doing some really neat things. So we're going to talk about classic cocktails, mixed and craft cocktails, all the events coming up, and we're even going to talk about cocktails and literature, which makes me very excited this hour. Let me go ahead and welcome some of the members of this diverse panel here. First of all, Chuck Sarankowski is here, Rochester Cocktail Revival event organizer. He's a 585 contributor. He's a partner at Good Luck and Cure. He's a bon vivant. Nice to see you, Chuck.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to talk about this schedule in just a second. Let's go around the rest of the table. Evie Fanning's here, the owner of Cheshire in the South Wedge. And Cheshire is like going back in time to a smoky habit. It's not smoky, but it's not smoky.
It's like it's smoky.
It's like it's smoky. It's
There's just, some smoky cocktails.
It's really a great place for cocktails in Rochester. Nice to see you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And next to Evie is Jason Barrett, the president and head distiller of Black Button Distilling in the Rochester Public Market. You've been there for how long?
Just over 14 months.
Just over 14 months. How's it going?
It's going very well. Actually, we just put up a couple of grain silos.
All right. So we're going to talk a little bit later in this hour about what it is exactly what you're doing. We're going to talk about whether we can find terroir in cocktails and what you're doing, what you're making, and So Jason's here from Black Button. Then from the Owl House, Jeff Ching is not only the owner of the Owl House, but soon to be the Playhouse. What's the Playhouse?
The Playhouse is a bar, arcade, and burger joint. We're hopefully opening late spring, early summer this year.
All right. For those who don't know the Owl House, and there will be some listeners who don't, where is the Owl House, Jeff?
The Owl House is off Monroe Avenue near the Strong Museum of Play.
Very interesting menu there. I've had mac and quack there in the past, among many other interesting dishes.
One.
Yeah, that was a good one. And next to Jeff is Amy Rock, the lead bartender at the Owl House. Nice to see you.
Hello, nice to see you too.
All right, Chuck Sarankowski, what we didn't have last year was potentially 400 people at a sort of a big opening gala. But we could see that this time around?
We sure hope so.
So what's going on?
We've got room for them. So the as you said, the festival itself takes place or begins starting on Tuesday, the 5th of May, on Cinco de Mayo with a party at the Ox and Stone. However, on Friday, the 8th, is the official kickoff party sponsored by Larceny Bourbon, featuring all kinds of cocktail shenanigans, some trapeze performers, an ice sculptor, and cocktails in the late afternoon. So if you're listening to this and you want to come, you might want to take a half day. And don't make up the hours on Saturday and come down. The doors open to the public at 4 p.m. Tickets are available online. It's going to be great. A big party to start off a weekend that will, with events that range from seminars to dinners to other, you know, any kind of cocktail-themed event.
Okay, that big Friday event is happening where, Chuck?
That happens at the public market.
At the public market. And we could see hundreds of people down there for that. But what's the mission of the Rochester Cocktail Revival?
First of all, you know, just an aside, I'd like to point out to all the listeners that we are drinking cocktails on air and they are delicious, just so everyone knows.
I am not condoning. I've lost a little bit of control of the studio. John Anders, our engineer, is about to come clean house in a second here. But go ahead, Joe.
Okay. So when you think about a culinary or a beverage experience, there's a lot of ways to eat, and there certainly are a lot of ways to drink. You don't need to go anywhere, and you don't need to spend a lot of money to do it. And when we talk about cocktails, we're not asking you to spend a lot of money, but we're asking you to give you an experience. And what we have in Rochester is a thriving culture where, starting with Jason's craft of distilling, we're making booze from grain, making it with your hands, and resulting in bartenders then crafting these liquors into drinks right in front of your eyes while you're experiencing our bars, is not an avenue to get a buzz or get drunk, but it's an avenue to experience culture. And it's quite vibrant in Rochester right now, and we want to take the time once a year to show that off.
Evie Fanning at Cheshire. Cheshire's been open for how long?
We are coming up on our third anniversary, actually on the 23rd of this month.
All right, it's in the South Wedge, and if you knew Solera, the wine bar downstairs, that's also Evie's joint. But upstairs was sort of the long-term work in progress that's now, if you can believe, 3 years.
3 years.
What is the vibe like? You know, Chuck talks about the idea of getting people together, not for the sake of drinking heavily for no reason, but sort of
right.
creating a kind of a community and a vibe. What's the vibe
like
at Cheshire?
Yeah, absolutely. So our goal at Cheshire is just to have an old-timey, classic kind of bar. It's welcoming. It's friendly. It serves pre-prohibition-era cocktails. We are not inventors, necessarily. We are revivers. So
revivers of the classics.
Revivers of the classics, revivers of this culture. The Rochester Cocktail Revival, in part, it's something that we are trying to create, but in part, it's really something that we are reflecting. There used to be like 1,200 distilleries in New York before the Prohibition. Then there were none, and now we're up to, Jason probably knows better than I do, 30?
About 50.
50, okay, good. So now we're at 50, but it's still a far cry. So in fact, like, this is a part of the country, and this is a part of the world where cocktails were part of the culture, distilleries were part of the
50
culture.
50 now, but there were 1,200 pre...
Yeah, I think there were about 1,200
wow.
pre-prohibition. This was really, like, kind of the hub of a lot of that. You know, the Manhattan was born out of the rye from the distilleries of upstate New York. So there is that history here, and it's now coming back. People are coming to appreciate it again. People are starting to indulge in it again. And a lot of it is just kind of pleasure. It's fun. I mean, I'm not pretending that we're talking about anything much more serious than alcohol, but that is kind of a gateway to a lot of other things that go on. It is part of our culture. It is part of our interaction. It is part of our humanity. It is part of our literature, as we're going to talk about.
Oh, we are going to talk about literature. No, I think to some degree what Evie said about sort of that connection, I've always felt it's part rationalization, but mostly true. That, and I view wine the same way. There are certain things that are connective tissue to get human beings together, and then other kind of relationships and connections and conversations form.
Exactly. So, you know, the question at our seminar is, how closely is alcohol linked to genius? Do we need this sort of lubricant to get people talking and thinking and being uninhibited and, you know, expressing? We all have ideas. We all have, you know, thoughts. We all have aspirations maybe, but sometimes it takes an extra nudge of somebody encouraging you, or sometimes something encouraging you to really express it, to really go forward with it. Cocktails are absolutely part of that culture.
Well, we're talking about the Rochester Cocktail Revival, which once again online in the list of events. Chuck is where?
At RochesterCocktailRevival.com.
Okay, and Evie mentioned the idea of the classics. A Sazerac.
A Sazerac, that's my favorite.
A Manhattan, you know, something that is, as you say, old-timey classic, sort of tried and true.
Exactly.
But I'm curious to know, and talking to people preparing for this discussion who really love the cocktail scene in Rochester, I want to ask Chuck and Amy and Jeff, you know, owning the establishments and working the establishments you work at, is there a pressure with the modern cocktail movement to have craft cocktails that are sort of creative and different and funky and new as opposed to the classics? And I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing. Chuck, what do you think?
I don't think it's so much a pressure as it is as if you are creative, you just have the impetus to do so. There's always the respect to the classics, and there are drinks such as the Sazerac, the Manhattan, the Negroni, the Daiquiri that really can't be messed with. However, there's a lot of things that human beings can drink or can make into beverages, and it doesn't mean that any kind of concoction from a mixture of ingredients is delicious or great, but there's a lot of opportunity to really break some new ground and explore via, you know, creativity.
All right, so at your establishments, you'll see classics and newfangled stuff?
Yes, at Good Luck, we definitely kind of split the menu between paying homage to quite a few classics while having a pretty vibrant list of originals. And at Cure, they're all house originals, and we take it a step further on Saturday nights. We do an event where we serve a special menu encouraging every drink to be a custom, on-the-spot made bespoke drink.
Amy, at Owl House, what's the vibe like in terms of mixing the classics versus the craft scene?
I think a lot of variations from classics go on. We have a lot of variety of liqueurs, spirits, herbs, juices to play with, and some things don't work out, some things are excellent and are sellouts. So it's a balance.
What's your favorite to make?
I definitely love a gimlet or a classic gin martini.
Okay, Jeff?
My favorite cocktail to drink. I think I like an old fashioned or generally a bourbon based cocktail like a Manhattan.
And what do you think about that push and pull between the craft versus the classics?
I mean, I think it's important to honor the history and where we come from. And it's I guess it's like any creative form. You want to there's a reason why these are classic cocktails, because the ratios are so perfect. They're so delicious. And I think we kind of, as Amy was saying, like the cocktails we create kind of evolve out of those classics. So
looking at the list of events for the RCR, I have no idea why you claim it's the 7th through the 10th. It really does start Tuesday, May 5th here.
Well, yeah.
Is there like a law that you'd be breaking by just saying it starts on the
5th? No, because when we started planning it back in, October, it was the 7th through the 10th.
Oh, I see. And you kept adding to it.
We're like really popular, so we had to add more events.
So just looking down the list, Tuesday the 5th at the Axon Stone, as Chuck mentioned there, is a Cinco de Mayo event. And then at Good Luck on Wednesday, May 6th, it's a Suntory Japanese whiskey dinner, Chuck.
Yeah, a lot of people, their hearts were broken when Suntory bought Beam Global, and now the company is called Beam Suntory, not Sunbeam, but Beam Suntory. But the truth is that much like they did with electronics or DJing, the Japanese have implied a finesse to whiskey making that is unparalleled. And the Suntory brand of whiskeys, including Hibiki and Yamazaki, are just some excellent, excellent things to experience. And here's our mid-sized city getting the chance that we get Jim Beam's Japanese whiskey ambassador in town to give a talk at this dinner and show you what those spirits are all about.
And Evie over at Cheshire, that same night starts at 5:00. Fernet about it?
Fernet about it. That's a takeover. So Fernet brands are coming to our bar. They're going to take over. We're going to feature a special menu featuring still classic cocktails, but with Fernet, Templeton, Teeling whiskey. So a lot of the spirits from their brand, and we're going to incorporate them into classic cocktails. We're going to have the people from the company there talking about them, sampling the spirits straight if people want to try them. But all of these events are really a great opportunity for people to try new things. You know, if you go out once a week, once a month, I don't know how often do regular people go out.
You can't relate having a couple of
it's
jobs
hard
and
for
a couple
me to
of
say.
Kids.
It's work for me to go to the bar.
Yes.
But the thing is, if you go out once in a while and you get your favorite, that makes perfect sense to me. I do that too. But this is a great opportunity to go out and try something that you haven't tried. Just sample it. Just give it a shot. You know, try it. And you're going to discover some new favorites.
All right. So that's Wednesday. Before I even get to Thursday, there's certain little points in this conversation that I want to divert sort of and hit some questions I have about the cocktail movement. Our friends at Pace.com wrote a piece about 8 new trends in cocktail movements. And they said, vodka is out, white whiskey is in.
I disagree completely.
Okay, see, that's why we've got people
yeah,
like
come
everyone.
On. No, we cannot count vodka out. I mean, really, as true drinkers and true bartenders, we have to embrace all the tools that we have at our disposal. First of all, vodka is great by itself. Like, a shot of vodka with a cold oyster, there's nothing better. But if you're going to do
cocktails,
I can
think of some things that are better. Come on.
Maybe one or two things. It's up there, though. But the other thing is, vodka is a great way to dilute the flavor of a cocktail without diluting the strength of the cocktail. So if you want to try a cocktail with mezcal that's very strong and very smoky, instead of adding water to it, add vodka to it. It'll stay just as strong. It'll be a little bit easier on the palate. You can pair it more easily with some herbs or some fruits or some other mixers. Vodka has a great, great, and very important place in mixology.
Should I ask Jason or someone else to jump in and explain, just when people hear white whiskey, what we're talking about?
So white whiskey is really the whiskey before it goes into the barrel. It comes off the still at under 160 proof. So it's got a lot more of that grain characteristic. Unaged corn whiskey, for instance, really tastes like biting into a fresh ear of corn. But then if you serve it at 100 proof, it's definitely got a little fire to it.
And then, as Evie mentioned, mezcal. Pace.com says there's been a meteoric rise of mezcal, yeah?
That's what we've seen. Yeah.
Why is that, Chuck?
I think that the craft scene is always looking for something new. There's a there's an inclination to year after year to, you know, find at least a category is a little easier to discover than a single spirit. Tequila was huge and continues to be huge. There was a huge increase in tequila production and importation in the United States. It's not produced in the United States, but production to answer towards the importation demand. And then from there, what's next? And you start looking at something that goes even a little bit deeper, more concentrated and artisanal, and you arrive at mezcal, which is a very, very, very deeply characterized spirit that has a lot of uses and gives a nice smoky bite to anything it arrives in.
Agave-based, right?
Agave-based. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that people, like when you talk about spirits, have a hard time remembering. You know, there's a whole batch of grain spirits that include vodka, gin, and whiskeys. And then there's fruit spirits like eau de vie and brandies. And then there's sugar spirits like rum and cachaça. And then there's this whole other category that's all agave. And it's not a bad experience we had when we were, 22 and a bottle of Jose Cuervo. It's a huge...
I had terrible experiences with Cuervo.
Yeah.
We haven't been on speaking terms since I was about 20.
We could reintroduce
you. Yeah. Well, and then there are brands like Fortaleza, Espolón, Casamigos are really much better ways to introduce you into the variety of experiences you get from tequilas.
That's what my Mexican friend Pablo said. Don't let Cuervo in college ruin your expectation of tequila, mezcal, the good stuff.
Hear, hear.
And that's what. So Pablo, if you're listening, I am trying to listen to them. Let me grab a quick phone call. Kenyatta in the city. Go ahead, Kenyatta.
Oh yes, you guys have been covering my question over the last couple minutes, but I was curious as to what's in a cocktail. What are the different alcohols and what are the different additives? All I can think of is vodka and the olives.
I got this.
Okay, Abby, go ahead.
There is an actual definition of what a cocktail is, and a cocktail has to have liquor, sugar, bitters, and water. So any combination of those things make a cocktail. Don't actually go adding water to it. Usually ice will count. So all you really need is liquor, bitters, sugar, and the sugar can come in the form of fruit juice or something like that. But it is a combination of those things, and technically that's what makes a cocktail.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kenyatta. Thanks. And Paul in Brighton. Paul, you're next. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, I was just tuning in, and I just want to express really how much I admire this discussion and the people that are doing this, discussing the technical aspects of mixing drinks. I drink a little bit myself, but I don't give it too much thought. And in my own profession, which is a technical profession, engineering, I've given talks and discussed things with great seriousness because I think that what I'm doing is so important. And I admit that there are some things that I don't think are that important and don't get involved in and don't understand why some people would invest enthusiasm and effort in discussing and describing what they do. But I do, in fact, admire it. As I just said, listening to this discussion, these people who are, it's their profession to do this work. And it's very admirable and rather heartening. I just wanted to say that.
Well, thank you, Paul. That's a very nice thing to say. And okay, well, let me ask Jeff then. He's talking about, the admiration for people who want to do something well. So when you see, we joke that Cuervo versus good stuff, mm-hmm. or and sorry to the Cuervo universe out there. Wow. Please don't call the show. Actually, whatever you want to do, Cuervo, if you're listening online. is Jose Cuervo a guy? I don't think...
He probably was at some point.
He probably, okay.
But
Jeff, when you think about the difference in terms of quality, he's offering admiration for the craft. And I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on just why the craft does matter to you guys as opposed to doesn't matter what you're drinking.
Yeah, I think he made a great point, when he was talking about his profession and when he speaks about his profession, how much he cares about it. And I think all of us here have arrived at this point in our careers through different roads, but ultimately we are very passionate about what we do. So I don't know, Amy was a career bartender and now she's moved into management, and I was a musician and discovered bartending, living in Boston. But
Amy, can you think of conversations you've had with people who came in for a drink and you say, I never would have met this person if they weren't interested in that?
Oh, sure. It's definitely opened up avenues and relationships and opportunities to meet the public and kind of just get to know them on a deeper level and change their mind and perception on a cocktail and their experiences at bars. And it's not all just shots and beers and hanging out for hours.
Totally.
It's sitting and conversating. And
I think that what we do matters to people. And like I said, we have to be careful not to take ourselves too seriously. We are slinging drinks. But people come to the bar at the best of times and the worst of times. And, you know, a cocktail is something that makes your day easier sometimes, that makes you more willing to talk about the things that you need to talk about. We were just sitting downstairs waiting for the show to start, and there was a musician down there, and we were talking about how, sure, what he does is the end, you know, in itself, but what we do is the means to that end. So
you mean the creativity and the creation?
Yeah, sure, and just the social aspect of it, the fact that in our culture, the bar is where you go when you have something to talk about that's important or that's not important, or you want to meet with somebody that you haven't seen in a long time, or you want to meet with somebody that you see every day. The bar, I mean, really, that's where you go, and you get and why not enjoy something that's good when you're at the bar, right? Like, why not get a well-crafted cocktail and enjoy something that's part of your culture and part of your history, and it's going to get you a little bit drunk, and it's going to get you a little bit relaxed, and so it does matter in its own way. What we do, I think helps the people do what they do.
I'm already seeing, based on the time, I'm not even going to be able to get through every event that's part of the Rochester Cocktail Revival in detail. That's all right, but it's rochestercocktailrevival.com for the full schedule of events. It officially kicks off May 7th, but that's sort of a lie. It's Tuesday, May 5th on Cinco de Mayo is when they're really getting going, if you want to check out the events. And based on some of the reaction we had last year, we do know that some of these things sell out pretty quickly, and I'm not saying that as someone who is slinging tickets for these guys. I'm just telling you honestly, I think a good friend of mine could not go to a couple last year, as much as I tried to pull some strings with Chuck.
Yeah, well, we're talking a little earlier in the month this year, so there are significantly more events that have not sold out. There's only actually a handful, I think, that have sold out, some of the smaller ones. And do you mind if I mention some things?
Go ahead, because in a moment we're gonna talk to Noah Rothbaum, who's gonna be here. But,
great.
But go ahead, tell me about some of the other events.
Noah is kind enough to join us from New York City. He'll be conducting two seminars at the Rochester Cocktail Revival, one on the history of whiskey, one on the state of the New York distilling scene. His colleague Robert Simonson, a writer for the New York Times, will be joining us on Saturday, May 9th, to talk about the history of the Old Fashioned. Legendary mixologist King Cocktail himself, Dale DeGroff, will be in Rochester on Thursday the 7th to give his On the Town speakeasy and saloon show. And then we also have, again, the opening part of the extravaganza. There are spirit dinners, meaning cuisine pairings with cocktails at all of our host bars, which I should say include Cheshire, Cure, The Daily Refresher, The Revelry, The Owl House, The Playhouse, Oxenstone, and Good Luck. There's also a couple events happening at Trotta and Char. So we got a whole community of restaurants involved in this. And then there's parties at all of the bars too, in various forms. You've got bands playing, shaking apple trees and doing all kinds of fun stuff.
It's also kind of a mix of themes here. Some, if you really want to learn, I mean, there you can get into bitters and learn all about bitters and understand them. And then there are some that are more sort of the fun angle. So I think it's kind of a mix. And let me bring in Noah Rothbaum, if we could. Author, former editor-in-chief of Liquor.com, author of a number of things, including The Business of Spirits, How Savvy Marketers, Innovative Distillers, and Entrepreneurs Changed How We Drink. Noah, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
Well, Chuck, you mentioned that Noah's going to be doing a couple of different events, and before I jump in with Noah, when is Noah going to be joining us for the RCR?
Noah will be giving a seminar at Rochester Contemporary Art Center on East Avenue on Saturday, May 9th. He'll be talking about his upcoming book on American whiskey label art, and then he'll also be giving a seminar at Black Button Distilling near the Public Market on Mother's Day, Sunday, May 10th, on the state of the New York State farm distilling scene.
Noah, what does the term cocktail revival in this country mean to you?
It means a lot to me. I've been writing about spirits and cocktails now for roughly about 15 years or so. And, you know, it's been an amazing journey. And, you know, really the revival of cocktails and spirits is, you know, we're living living in a golden age for both of them. You know, it's thanks to people like Dale DeGroff, who will be with us for the Rochester Cocktail Revival, and others who have been, you know, leading this rebirth. And to be honest, you know, for a while every year I would think, oh my God, this is as big as it's going to get. You know, we've got five bars in New York that make, you know, pre-prohibition cocktails. Like, you know, we have, you know, a selection of, you know, new whiskeys. But every year it just gets bigger and bigger, and, you know, it's been really a wonderful thing to see and be part of.
I've spent time down at Hill Rock in the Hudson Valley and seen some of what they're doing up close. They love to say there is real terroir in whiskey. Is there terroir in whiskey?
Well, I mean, Hill Rock is an interesting example down in Ancrum, New York, in farm country in the Hudson Valley. You know, what they're doing is interesting because they're really, you know, we talk about farm-to-table cooking and, you know, now sort of farm-to-glass drinking. And they're, you know, beginning to grow their own grains, and they're going to start doing floor malting, which is, you know, a pretty unique thing. Most Scotch companies don't even do floor malting anymore. But, you know, with that said, you know, their master distiller is Dave Pickerel, who for 14 years was the master distiller at Maker's Mark. So, you know, Dave has certainly brought a little bit of Kentucky up to New York's Hudson Valley. But, you know, I think everybody, you know, whether they're in Kentucky or New York or, you know, wine country in California has sort of brought their own spin and sort of unique, you know, way to making spirits. And that's, you know, sort of been part of this wonderful revival, is that we've seen all types of innovative and interesting things to drink from a range of, you know, both small and large distilleries.
Talking to Noah Rothbaum on the phone with us, the author who's going to be here for the Rochester Cocktail Revival. And let me also kick a question over to Jason Barrett. When we talk about, if you're drinking Scotch-style whiskey, if you're drinking whiskey, if you're drinking Scotch from place to place, Lafroig to Lagavulin, for example, is there a sense of place to you? Do you get a sense that if you were tasting blind, would you say, this is likely from here to here to here? Should we care about that?
I think the different areas of the country and around the world, and certainly the regions of Scotland, have very specific styles to them. You know, I can certainly, when I'm tasting something, have a rough idea, you know, is this Kentucky bourbon? Is this artisan bourbon from the West Coast, from the East Coast? You know, tasting totally blind, it gets a little harder to taste than that. But certainly the regions of Scotland have grown up with these traditions, some being much saltier, some being much smokier, you know. So I, you know, some of it is definitely what's impacted by their local microclimate. Some of it is also just the traditions that they've grown up in. And I think we should care about that because it gives us the opportunity to have so many different expressions.
Well, Noah, in terms of all the opportunity for expression, like Jason's talking about, the folks down there at Hill Rock told me that the one thing they can't get is peat because DEC protects the wetlands right now, and they didn't want to go in overnight and scuba dive and grab some peat illegally. So they're actually bringing in peat from Scotland for now, but they are working with the DEC to change that.
I mean, it's an interesting problem to have. you know, and I think, and part of, you know, this whole, you know, rebirth, you know, part of what, you know, in addition to working with Hill Rock, Dave works with a whole bunch of distillers across the country and around the world, and a lot of it is sort of rediscovering traditional methods and, you know, figuring out what people used to grow in different parts of the country and how they would use that to make different spirits. I mean, I think that's always, you know, been reflected, what people have, you know, drunk over, you know, the hundreds of years that people have enjoyed alcoholic spirits, is that, you know, they've always made stuff that they grow locally, you know, what they, you know, whether it's, you know, maybe they have grapes, so they make wine or cognac, or they have cherries, or they have fruit, or they have rye, or they have wheat, you know, and that's obviously informed, you know, how they distill and what they make, and, you know, sort of created, you know, a regionality that, you know, really over the last, you know, roughly since the end of Prohibition has deteriorated, you know, in this country.
We're talking to Noah Rothbaum, who's going to be talking whiskey at a seminar, also the state of New York distilling. We've talked a little bit about that with Evie and Jason and got a sense for how things are now compared to really before Prohibition and how much has changed. How would you describe the landscape of New York State distilling?
Well, currently, I mean, you know, New York has definitely been on the cutting edge of the craft distilling movement. You know, we've you know, in terms of both legislation as well as just, you know, the number of distilleries opening and what the distillers have done, you know, both, you know, in terms of producing alcohol, but also changing drinking, you know, perceptions and laws and getting, you know, the state really behind them. You know, we still have a long way to go, you know, before Prohibition, there were hundreds of small craft distilleries in New York State. You know, there were a lot of, obviously, a lot of farm distilleries all over America. You know, working on my new book, The Art of American Whiskey, which comes out later this month. You know, it you know sort of traces the arc of of American spirits. You know, from its earliest days, colonial times through the present. And what's amazing is just how many cataclysmic ups and downs industry as a whole has had. So, you know, while we're still definitely on an upswing for American whiskey in New York State and also, you know, across the country, we still have a long ways to go before we reach sort of the high water mark, which was the 1970s for American whiskey consumption in the U.S.
All right, Noah, before I let you go, one more trend question. I was in London a couple of years ago. A lot of talk about sherry there. I probably always is. But everything I read now says sherry is having a moment in the United States. But I don't know. Are people buying sherry or are writers fixating on sherry?
Yeah, I definitely think it's one of those drinks that every couple of years is heralded as the next big thing. You know, sake is often put in that category, cachaça from Brazil as well. And sherry has definitely been, a cause célèbre for writers, bartenders. But, recently a great book came out on sherry, in the last 12 months called Sherry. But, I don't really think that the general public is drinking sherry or port, hasn't really, that hasn't gotten, trickled down, mixology. It hasn't reached the public yet, but bartenders are definitely fascinated, as are journalists.
All right, panel, anybody in this room, are people ordering sherry at your establishments, at least in any significant numbers?
I can tell you that between the wine bar and the cocktail bar, we go through more sherry and port in the cocktail bar as part of the cocktails. So if it's part of a cocktail, I think people are more interested in the cocktails. At the wine bar, I don't really get many orders for sherry or port.
Yeah, we try to push it pretty hard at Good Luck. We've got some pretty nice ones by the glass, but they don't do too well on their own. However, as a cocktail ingredient, especially sherry, the Fino Manzanilla varieties, the salinity or the astringency of those products really provide balance in a drink, much like a dry vermouth might. So it gives you a pretty good opportunity for flavor.
Mm-hmm. Good. I'm sorry, Owl House.
We've had the same experience. I think we feature port. I mean, any of these things, our culture is not accustomed to drinking these things on their own. So, but we do try to find interesting ways to get them in as ingredients.
No, it's been fun talking to you on this broadcast, and we're going to have a lot of fun with you when we see you in Rochester in a few weeks for the Rochester Cocktail Revival. Thanks for taking the time for us.
Sure, looking forward to seeing you guys.
Noah Rothbaum, author and former editor-in-chief of Liquor.com, author of a book called The Business of Spirits, and his upcoming book is on whiskey. Well, much more to talk about. Let's get a short break in because I'm way late, and I wouldn't want John Andrus to come through the glass to tell us that we are going to take a break whether we want one or not. But it's a short break. We're going to come back, get more of your phone calls in. Andrew in Rochester will hit your question coming up and talk more about the Rochester Cocktail Revival, which is just a few weeks away, officially the 7th through the 10th of May, and rochestercocktailrevival.com. More on that next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections, we're talking about equal pay for women first hour. And a new study that aims to look at how we're doing in Rochester in Western New York. We know historically women have made less than men for the same work across the country, but what about right here in our area? Then second hour, La Leña and Classical Idol. We're talking about music competitions. It's all coming up Monday on Connections.
5, 4, 3, 45 years ago, an uneventful Apollo mission.
We have commit and we have liftoff at 2.
Until an explosion crippled the spacecraft.
Everything rocked back and forth, lights came on.
My feeling just went to a sick feeling in my stomach.
Apollo 13 astronauts remember their mission later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And that'll be this afternoon at 4 on this, your NPR News station.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're talking about the Rochester Cocktail Revival with Chuck Sarankoski of Good Luck and Cure. Jeff Ching and Amy Rock are here from the Owl House in Rochester. Jason Barrett is the president and head distiller of Black Button Distilling. And Evie Fanning is the owner of Cheshire in the South Wedge. And Katie writes to us on Twitter, stuffing envelopes at work, listening to Evan Dawson talk to the Rochester Cocktail Revival folks. How long till 5 p.m.? Thirsty. Well, it is a Friday, and it's not that long, Katie, until 5 p.m. Andrew in Rochester wants to jump in. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hello.
That's good. Thank God it's Friday, right?
Yeah. This is the right time for this conversation.
I have a question regarding bartender differences. You know, I have a favorite drink that I go in and I order, and, you know, when I get it, depending on the bartender, it's a completely different drink from another location. Why is that?
Ah, well, that is a from an operator who, you know, employs something like 12 bartenders. I could tell you, I sure hope that, or we strive for consistency. It's hard enough to do that in one or two buildings when you, despite the standards, as you try to establish that across an entire scene, it's next to impossible. Hopefully your experience is that the drink, no matter where you ordered, is well balanced. But the fact is that classic cocktails, any recipe for a classic cocktail, be it a Manhattan or a Sazerac, there are at least 3 to 4, if not dozens, of variations on what the standard recipe should be. You should see us all agree in our RCR meetings how to make a Sazerac. It's kind of humorous.
I think that was a dig at me.
Go ahead, Evie.
The thing, the history of cocktails is really more of a mythology of cocktails. It's so old. Drinking, believe it or not, goes back to before writing. And so there are conflicting stories. There are different recipes. There are different ways of doing things. As bartenders, what we want to do, depending on what our objective is, I want to try to revive the original recipe. So we try dozens of different things, dozens of different liquors and different ratios until we get it to just the right ratio that I think it needs to be. And I think if you come to Cheshire, any of the bartenders at Cheshire will make you the same drink. But then when you go to another bar, they have either revived a different recipe, or they have put their own twist on it, or they have listened to somebody else's perception of that recipe. And so, actually, it's kind of a good problem to have, because if a Manhattan was a Manhattan everywhere you went, you could just go to one bar. As it is, you have to go to, what, 8? 9?
at least 8 this year, if you don't mind.
At least 8 this year, you know, and find your preference and find your bartender and make that part of your day and part of your community.
It is interesting. I went on a little winter getaway for a couple of days in February with a friend who did about 6 weeks of barrel aging of his own Manhattan, which I think is now technically illegal.
Technically illegal.
I don't think you can do that at home.
None of us technically.
Everything
do that.
Is illegal if you call the SLA and ask them.
Okay.
Then it's definitely illegal.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting perspective. But 6 weeks of barrel age was fabulous on this one.
Thank you.
I wouldn't have done another day. And I know there have been
technically, we never did it.
Technically, you've never done it.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, though.
Here is a challenge for the panel from Sam on Twitter, something I've never heard of, and I hope I'm not getting myself in trouble. Sam's challenge is this. I have a bunch of vervain, V-E-R-V-A-I-N-E. Anybody ever heard of it? He says, it's the most disgusting liquor known to man. I challenge your guests to offer any way to make it palatable. I don't know what it is, though.
I don't know what it is either.
Do you know what it is, Jason?
Yeah. I don't, but I have a suggestion. So during Prohibition, they would basically stuff juniper berries and other herbs and botanicals into it to make unpalatable liquor more palatable. Stop by Lori's Natural Foods, pick up the weirdest sounding ingredients you can come up with, steep them in there, and it can't get any worse.
Sam, I want to know how this comes out here. That is a great piece of advice.
Maybe if he takes a minute and tells us what it tastes like. I've never heard of it. We've heard of a lot of things, I think, between all of us here. That's got to be pretty obscure. Or just, you know, use a scant quarter ounce of it and you know, make a Manhattan and, you know, with 2-1, little vermouth, and put a dash of that in and see if you still hate it. You probably won't.
Anything as a sour tastes good. Lemon juice and sugar, it's going to be delicious. If it's not, a little bit of ginger, nothing can stand up
okay.
to ginger.
Jeff and Amy.
Well, I like Jason's idea, you know, infusing it, which again is an illegal thing for a bar to do, but you can really transform, like taking a culinary approach from this, you can really transform some liquors that way.
Okay, well, let me hit a couple of other points as we talk about the Rochester Cocktail Revival, which is coming up here. And before the hour gets away from us, there's, Chuck, 30 events this year?
Around 30.
Around 30 events, May 7th through the 10th, really May 5th through the 10th at RochesterCocktailRevival.com. And I know that you guys have taken a lot of pride in doing a number of things to support local businesses, you know, and there's a lot of ancillary sort of impacts here as well. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So a festival like this is not easy to put together, and it can't be done just with the bars that are hosting it. It also involves some of our friends at other great Rochester small businesses, such as regional distributors, Bricolo Garden Centers, Abode over in the South Wedge, City Blue Imaging, Writers and Books, Rocco Contemporary Art Center, of course, Black Button Distillery, the City of Rochester and the Public Market, and then two or three coffee shops, Java's, Pour, and Joe Bean are all helping us out as well.
You also, as a proprietor and someone who works at with Good Luck and Cure, you have all kinds of choices on what you decide to pour. You look at Black Button. I know you take a lot of pride in what is happening locally. Jason, what's been the impact for you in, 14 months since you've been open? Is that right?
Yeah, we've been open 14 months. It's been a phenomenally positive response, both, you know, obviously the business has grown, but also getting to know and work with the bartenders and the bar owners here in town and then for us across the state. But we're very, very fortunate. I didn't actually come to Rochester because of the cocktail scene. I grew up here, but I was really, really happily surprised to find it when I came back. Because cocktails would not be what they are in this town without events like this and the bars that are putting it on.
Mark wants to know if Black Button does tasting right there at the Public Market.
Yes, we do. Yeah, Saturdays 9 to 5. Folks are welcome to stop in anytime.
And Olive tells us on Twitter that vervain is an herb. Again, new to us.
Cool. All right, cool. There's a lot of herbs. Not lemon verbena, obviously different.
Not verbena. Vervain. Vervain. Is apparently what
that is.
All
right, well, bring some to the revival. Let's see what we can do with it.
that's a very good idea. Okay, Evie, I want to ask you about a very specific event because you've got your literature hat on. You're somebody who not only is the owner of Cheshire, but you've got a literature hat on,
right.
And you've got an event at the Rochester Cocktail Revival that focuses on what specifically?
So we've got a seminar on Sunday, on Mother's Day, actually, called Three Sheets to the Wind, Cocktails and Literature.
Three Sheets to the Wind.
And that's because those are my two passions, reading and drinking. And luckily, they're very compatible with one another. So, I think that Mother's Day, for one thing, actually is not for the kids. It's for the mothers. So leave the kids with the dads. Come out to the seminar, and we're going to have quite a few cocktails and talk about the ways in which cocktails and the culture of cocktails has influenced literature. Cocktails are really cool for me because in this culture, where we are right now, the United States in the history of the world is a young country, and many of our traditions are borrowed or adapted from the old world. And cocktails are actually an American tradition, and so they have an influence in so many other American traditions. So we're going to start with some of our famous American authors. You know, of course, Hemingway comes to mind, and Fitzgerald, and that entire generation. So we'll try some of their favorite cocktails. And then we're going to go to some cocktails that we see in literature that Gatsby drinks and Daisy drinks, and from there, we're going to go to some fictional cocktails. So there are characters in Lolita and in The Clockwork Orange that name drinks that don't actually exist. We're going to make them exist, and we're going to try them. And then, you know, a step beyond that is, what about all the unfortunate characters that were born before the cocktail was born? What would Hamlet drink? So we're going to think about that, and we'll make up a cocktail for Hamlet. And the most important question at the end of it is, what should you drink with your favorite book? Like, how do we pair the cocktail with the book? And once the seminar is over, what I'm hoping is that the people there are going to challenge our bartenders to come up with a specific cocktail to pair with their favorite book. Because it is an art. It is creative. And while the classics are my favorite always, you know, we need to adapt it to our particular lifestyle and our particular passions.
A lot of flights, short pours?
At the beginning, probably. They'll get taller as the day goes on.
Well, I do agree. Evie is a mom. My wife, of course, is a mom, and I do agree with Evie's point on Mother's Day. It's for giving the mom whatever they want to.
Well, we have, we're working, we have a very expensive ad budget to put this on, and $1 million line the ad agency came up with is that everybody needs a mother, and every mother needs a cocktail.
I love it.
That is very good. All right, I've got some...
We don't have an ad agency.
I have some listener questions that if I had time for, I was going to try to squeeze them in. Can we try to hit some listener questions about the cocktail scene?
Yeah, it'll be quick.
All right, we're going to try to go down the list here. A blender, is that a no-no at a bar?
Not necessarily. You can craft a craft cocktail with a blender if you use it right.
You don't need one, but you could totally put one to good use.
I just don't like the fact that they're so loud. That's why I wouldn't have one.
Yeah.
Amy?
They're super loud, but frozen drinks are delicious. Blending things that are fatty, like coconut milk, happens better in a blender in a quick instant, and... They're loud, but that doesn't take that long.
Okay, so
I've
it's
made
not
frozen margaritas.
But so the answer is though no, it's not a no.
It's fine.
Okay, it's got a function. Another question: I see a lot of cocktails with a raw egg in it. Is that safe?
Yes, you got to do it. Every sour has an egg white in it. It doesn't really do anything for the flavor, but it makes a beautiful texture. It makes a froth. Go with the organic eggs. Get something local, and go for it.
The citrus, right? That can help kill anything in there. As that was my understanding.
I mean, use fresh eggs. Use local eggs from a venerable source. If you have an immunodeficiency, problem, or you're pregnant, maybe, or elderly, maybe skip those drinks.
Consult your physician.
I've been drinking them for years.
Okay. Even when you were pregnant. Next question: is it imperative that you have different glasses for different types of cocktails?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Look, there's a tradition, there's a culture, part of it is the art, part of it is the beauty. Why not? Glasses are beautiful, stemware is beautiful. Yeah. Get the stuff, get your different drinks in different glasses. Technically, in a drink that's served up, you don't want to warm it with your hands, so you need a stem. But really, if you drink it fast enough, it doesn't really matter. But it just looks so nice in the glass that it's designed for.
The hardest garnish to create.
The hardest garnish to create.
There shouldn't really be a hard garnish. Garnishes are practical. And so really it's a peel or a twist or an olive, throw it right in your cocktail and don't worry about it being hard.
Carving a hummingbird out of a dragon fruit or something like that might be
Or carve a hummingbird out of a dragon fruit,
Ice. I've seen some bars use cubes with flowers inside. I've seen circular cubes. I even see some mixologists take an ice pick to a chunk of ice. Is this all for show or is there some purpose to the variation?
There's definitely functionality to this. We could probably easily spend an hour just talking about ice. There's heat indexes and surface mass. Any substantial ice, even those in your ice cuber at home, are superior to chip ice like you'd get out of a fountain soda machine.
The bigger your ice cube, the more cold you're going to get without diluting it as much. So the bigger the ice cube, the better is the short answer to that.
Yep. Stronger drink.
Do you ever salt or sugar the rim of a glass?
Sure.
Definitely.
Or put green chili or matcha tea or dehydrated orange
salt
peel.
And sugar.
Coffee.
Yeah, coffee. All kinds of things.
Spicy cocktails appear to be growing in popularity. Does anyone actually order more than one?
Oh, heck yes.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, that Ancho Reyes.
So fun to play with.
Yeah,
there's very spicy stuff makes you want to drink more. It's kind of a self-serving kind of thing. It works great. It's like peanuts. You just keep wanting to drink more.
Well, it's kind of like in wine. Wines with more acidity, you will drink more.
Absolutely.
Heavier, thicker wines.
Makes you thirsty.
Same with sour cocktails and same with spicy cocktails.
Yeah,
and
they're delicious. Try it.
There's something to spice drinks where I think we view them, there's almost a ubiquity to spice drinks where it almost should be, have a name just like an old-fashioned or something like that. And they're all variations on a theme. It's tequila and chili and something else, and it's good. Yeah.
What cocktail do you absolutely despise making?
That's a good question. A vodka soda, because I think you could do better, customer. I think you could do better.
Do you make a lot of vodka sodas?
Oh, yeah.
It pays the bills.
Yeah. I love making this drink, but many bartenders hate it. It's the Ramos Gin Fizz. It's beautiful and it's delicious. You're supposed to shake it for 12 minutes.
For how long?
12 minutes. Technically, you should shake a Ramos Gin Fizz for 12 minutes. This is where a blender might come in handy.
Yeah. I shake mine for 13. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you have an Amy? Anything you despise making?
Nope. There's things I don't like to drink, But if a guest wants to drink a Long Island iced tea, I will make the best Long Island iced tea they've ever had. And it's not what I want to drink.
It's just too many ingredients. The longer the list of ingredients, the more difficult it's going to take, or difficult it's going to be, and the more time it's going to take to make it, which means for the customer,
yeah,
it's going to take you that much longer to get your drinks.
That's something to even say. As far as we are cocktail bartenders, we go to other cocktail bars in this city or others, and you know, sometimes where you can err in making a cocktail is putting so many things in it where the flavor just becomes muddy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then the last question for you before we hit the event schedule one more time is, what are you drinking tonight, Jeff? One drink tonight on a Friday night.
I had last night, I might not be drinking tonight. I was drinking a Last Word at the Daily Refresher, and it was delicious, and that's still on my mind.
Amy?
Classic gin martini with an olive.
Chuck?
I'm a fan of this new peas and carrots drink we are doing at Good Luck called Probably Been Said.
Probably Been Said.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's a Good Luck, not Cure, though.
That's a Good Luck, yeah.
Good Luck. Okay. Yeah. Jason Barrett?
I'm a Manhattan drinker any night of the week.
Evie?
Easy, Sazerac.
It's always Sazerac for you.
It's always a Sazerac for me. Nothing wrong with a classic.
But how do you make it?
Come to Cheshire and I'll show you.
All right, so we have covered a lot of ground here as we talk about the Rochester Cocktail Revival, but if you want event information, again, there's roughly 30 events this year starting May 5th. The event officially is the 7th through the 10th, and Chuck Sarankowski, where would you direct people to go?
The best place to see all the events is RochesterCocktailRevival.com. You can also follow us on Instagram as you get, you know, peppers of little bits of information there too.
And Chuck, if you were part of the going public and you could only go to one event, it would be what?
I would go and I would see Dale DeGroff, his On the Town presentation on Thursday, May 7th.
Thursday, May 7th with, yeah, Dale. Great stuff, everybody. I want to thank a big and diverse panel as we've talked about the Rochester Cocktail Revival. It's a Friday afternoon. You've inspired a lot of people. And have fun with this. RochesterCocktailRevival.com. Jeff and Amy from the Owl House and the Playhouse soon to be.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Chuck, always nice to see you. Good luck, Cure, 585 Magazine and RCR. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jason, congratulations on the success of Black Button. Thank you for taking
the
time.
Thank you.
And Evie Fanning, at the owner of Cheshire.
Thank you for having me.
The only owner. She is the one in charge. I hope her husband hears the rebroadcast at some point. Have a great weekend, everybody. John Andrews, thanks for great work engineering. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Member Supported Public Radio.